baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Well, good morning and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. And so pleased to be joined today by writer for Jays Nation and Blue Jays minor league aficionado, Brennan Delaney. Welcome to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
No worries. Happy to be here.
Buddy, we're so excited to talk some Blue Jays and baseball with you, and I did want to just start with this. I love how you highlight prospects and minor league guys on Twitter. Like, it's just tough for the average fan sometimes to dig up that information, and you do a great job of finding it and then sharing it in a very consumable way. So, great work.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, buddy. Let's get right into it here. In the Cleveland Guardians, New York Yankees. Let's start with the division series that's remaining there. What have you thought about this series so far? It's the only division that's going to go the distance. Gerrit Cole pitched a gem last night, 7 innings, allowing 2 runs. Yankees tie the series up, going back to New York. Do you predict this Game 5 with Jameson Taillon and Aaron Civale on the bump? Do you think it's going to be another low-scoring game, or do you think we could see some offense in this one?
Just with how Cleveland plays, I think it will be low scoring, at least for them. In terms of the Yankees, after Judge and Stanton, their lineup kind of thins out. So I don't know. I think it'll end up being low scoring just because of the pitching as well as offense not being the greatest.
So. More importantly, does Aaron Judge get booed again?
God's Yankee fans, of course he will. If he strikes out, I mean, like, come on. Our problem is the wave, a wave in the middle of the game that we're winning. Not a fan of it, but at least we don't boo our players when they strike out like 3 times in a game.
I'm interested to hear what you think. It's funny, we had on the show last night Julia Cruz with MLB.com, and she was actually mentioning that Blue Jays fans, in her opinion, are a little light on the player sometimes in comparison to other organizations' fans. Do you feel that way? Do you think that maybe they could be a little tougher on the players from time to time? Because personally, I'm fine with the way Jays fans treat their team.
I think we tend to forget, myself included, that players are humans and they go through the same struggles that we do. So you don't know if, like, hey, maybe Vladimir Guerrero Jr. like broke up with his girlfriend. That's things that we tend to forget that, hey, you know, stuff like that does impact players as well if they go through struggles. So for me, I just, you know, if someone's struggling, it's like, okay, I hope they bounce back because I want my team to win. But I kind of have a little bit of leniency if they struggle. You know, I don't want to bully someone like how the Yankee fans bullied Gallo. That to me doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, this is my livelihood. Baseball is my livelihood, but I don't want to, you know, run someone out of town because they are struggling for half a year. So to me, that makes sense.
I love that, man. And I think that's such a good point, the human aspect of it all. And this kind of goes into what we're about to talk about pretty nice. I mean, MLB's slogan over the last few years has been, let the kids play, which I'm all for. Some people a little upset over last night and Josh Naylor with the Guardians. They figure he may have crossed the line. So for those of those who don't know Josh Naylor, Mississauga boy with the Guardians, his home run celebration, and this is not the first time he did it, but his home run celebration all year has been, he mimics rocking a baby. He pretends that the pitcher is his baby. He runs around the bases screaming things like, he's my son, this is my son. Basically, it's all a play on he's the pitcher's daddy now. But of course, on this bigger stage in the playoffs, all of a sudden, more eyes were on it, and so people are pretty upset. So my question for you, Brennan, is there a line when it comes to having fun and entertainment? Like, is there a point where this is too much?
No, absolutely not. Have fun. If you get upset about that, pitch better. Simple as that. If you hit him next season, you're going to give him a free base. That's the way I look at it. Obviously, he can get injured. That's not good. But, you know, like, if you plunk me, then I get a free base. That's how I look at it. So have fun. If the pitcher's upset, just pitch better. If you strike him out, celebrate. Like, it's, what is the line? Who cares about the line? Have fun. It's a game. It's entertainment. Have fun.
Do you think that the Yankees fans are going to rain down booze on him?
I think Naylor will love it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He's an interesting character, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, some guys do love playing the heel and really lean into that.
Yeah, I mean, like,
he seems like the type.
If he like soaks it all in, I mean, if he's expecting it, he's gonna love that. So I don't understand. Like, yeah, you can boo him all you want, but
what's better, a booing from the other team's home crowd or a standing ovation from your own? Right, like, I'd almost rather be booed.
Yeah.
As the visiting club in New York. Like, that means you're doing something right. Something.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that, yeah. Because, you know, if they boo, then it's like, oh, crap, this team hates me. But if you cheer for your own team, you know, you're kind of expected to do that. You're not really, you don't tend to get booed by the other opposing team that often unless you're like Odor. But I don't know. I feel like, yeah, you'd have more fun being booed than cheered.
Craig Ballard is in the chat, says Naylor acted horribly, was embarrassed for him. All the fun in the world is available. Does not need to include trying to humiliate your opponent specifically and personally.
See, it's funny because I'm sort of on the fence on this one. Like, I didn't feel myself getting upset, but also I know I'm biased against the Yankees, and I love when Yankees fans are upset and Yankees media is upset, and so maybe that is dulling my emotion on this. You know, like, thinking from a Blue Jays fan, would I be upset if Naylor did that with Alek Manoah? No, he already has done that with Alek Manoah. Like, that's the one thing about this that is kind of funny to me. Naylor has been doing this all year. This isn't new. This is only new.
For me, watches Cleveland games.
For me, this would only be crossing the line if, like, Gerrit Cole's father or child passed away recently.
That's fair.
If that was the case, then maybe we lay off on the, hey, I'm your daddy after his dad just passed away. Maybe we skip it that time.
But no, otherwise. But okay, like, even with Alek Manoah, like, he celebrated after striking out whoever on Boston, random plug number 5 or whatever. Like, you know, it was fun to watch. So, I'd be upset if, you know, someone did that against the Jays. But even then, it's like, well, I mean, be better.
So, speaking of unwritten rules, Brennan, I'm curious your thoughts on this, because according to Mariners Twitter, the Astros social media administrator, putting a cartoon broom sweeping the Mariners away on a moon is the most offensive thing that has happened to this fan base. Is this something or is this just nothing? Like, is it inappropriate for a team's social media admins to be trolling, for lack of a better term, the other fan base? Or is this some sort of sacred unwritten rule that I just hadn't heard about?
I mean, I tend not to really like brand Twitter that, like, you know, like, your verified Twitter is trolling people, but like, it's a sweet post. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, I'm sure that, like, I don't really pay attention to Mariners Twitter, but I'm sure that they had the same, like, kind of post towards the Jays. So, like, I don't understand why you're upset about it. Yeah,
because there is a lot of people upset. Like, I've been kind of surprised by the amount of, like, pushback on it.
So soft.
Weird. Like, they swept you. Okay, be better next season. Like, I don't understand why you'd be upset about that. But to each their own. Mariner fans are weird.
Although it did take 4.5 games to sweep them. A lot of extra innings in that series. So.
Yeah, a lot of extra innings in that series.
I'm glad I didn't watch that game. That would have been absolutely. I'm glad my team wasn't also involved in that game. I've been
I watched it, Brennan, and I said that like 8 times. I'm like, thank God I'm not emotionally invested in this game. I would be losing my mind.
Yeah, you know, I'm sad that the Jays were swept, but I'm happy that it didn't go to extra time or at extra innings, and then, you know, had the same kind of amount of time in that game, because that would not have been fun.
So I'm curious your thoughts on all this rest versus rust talk that is going on about these division series. This has been a talking point for a few days, but it really has kind of reared its head since the Dodgers and Braves were eliminated. Do you think it's a disadvantage for these division teams to have those 4 to 5 days off? And is there something that needs to be done about the playoff format? Or are you fine with the way things are, and this is a little bit of sour grapes from those teams' fan bases that have lost?
It's definitely sour grapes, but I do think there's actually an argument. I mean, when hot teams get hot, you kind of want to continue to play. Like, I don't know how long the Dodgers had off, but it must have been 5-6 days. And in that span, you do tend to cool off. And, like, for me, the sample size of 5 games is not enough to determine the best team. And that's why the best team usually actually doesn't even win the World Series. But for me, I think there's an argument for it, but at the same time, I mean, like, you are the better team. You should be finding a way to win, especially since in the wild card series, you do tend to use your best pitchers and use more bullpen pitchers. So
if you're in the commissioner's office, what do you do to fix this problem? Like, I like the wild card. I like the 3 games far more than the 1 game series. So how do you fix that 5 games off?
I don't think you can, honestly.
Right?
I don't think there's any way of doing it. I mean, maybe it's just because it's the first season and you saw the Braves and the Dodgers both get eliminated pretty quickly. But, you know, the Astros run one. The Yankees have a good chance of winning, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 2 of 4 ain't bad. And I mean, even like, I don't remember the postseason and how it turned out last season, but I'm sure that a few favorites in the S series, they also lost. I mean, the Braves won the World Series. They
had to upset somebody to get there. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they had a worse record than the Jays. I'm still mad about not getting a higher pick than the Braves, but.
Well, this pushback about the playoffs has been interesting. And for all of you in the chat, feel free to drop in here and let us know what you think about the new playoff format. But it just seems to me that it included so many more fan bases and created so much more interest in the game. And I could be out to lunch because, listen, when they first announced, and Adam can attest to this, when they first announced the idea of expanding playoffs, I was the old man banging the drum being like, don't change it. I'm happy with the way it is, right? But after watching this season, like, I have changed my tune, and I think it is good for the game. I mean, it's not like the Philadelphia Phillies are just an above 500 team. Like, they finished 12 games above 500, 87 wins. They were the lowest team on the totem pole. It still seems like an incredibly competitive team. And I mean, it's not like we're being forced to, as baseball fans, settle for watching Juan Soto and Bryce Harper. Like, I guess what I'm asking is, if this is a problem, it's only a problem with these big market teams, right? Like, it's just sour grapes. I know I'm kind of circling back around here, but I'm just curious. Like,
the big markets want a 1 in 4 chance of winning the World Series is what they want.
Yeah.
And do you think the division series should go 7 games? That's the other thing I keep hearing a bunch of.
I think it would be cool because I think, again, like, we'll get into it later, I think, from the notes, but I see the Jays lose in 2 games and I'm like, it happens. And even 5 games, it's not enough to show off who is the better team. So for me, like, I think it would be cool to have a 7-game divisional series and then a championship series and then the World Series, but I don't know how they would be able to fit that in inside the season.
Brennan, like, that is the perfect baseball nerd response. Like, yeah, of course I want more baseball.
Well, no, I've been watching a lot of Arizona Fall League and the Dominican Winter League as well. But, you know, like, I'd like an extra 2 games in the divisional series to, you know, make sure the better team has a better chance of winning, even with the rust. But, well, yeah, I don't know how it fits.
So I saw a tweet from Buster Olney, and he suggested that one of the ways that this could solve the complaining that we're hearing about the playoff format is that the winners of the division, like the top 2 teams, so like let's say the Astros and the Yankees, could choose if they want to play in the wild card series and give the other team the bye, which I think is a hilarious solution because, of course, you're going to choose the bye, right?
Yeah, it'd be weird if I ever saw a divisional team decide to play in a wild card series of 2 games or 3.
Yeah,
that's again, the sample size of rest versus rust is 1 season, so I think we should maybe wait another 2 or 3 to actually see, okay, is this actually a problem, or is it just that the Braves and the Dodgers absolutely suck?
This might be a, like, the, I'm a big football fan. This might be the football fan influencing my opinion, but there's no best of 3. There's no best of 7 on your way to the Super Bowl. Like, if you don't show up on Sunday ready to play, your season's over. Like, too bad, so sad. And maybe that's why I don't really have too much sympathy for the Blue Jays or teams that get upset in a 3-game series. Like, okay, you won 102 games, but you still need to show up in October, and I don't know why we should be bailing teams out that aren't ready for that. I don't know.
I saw a stat too, Brennan, just to talk about the 5-game division series and those complaining about it. And if you look at the Dodgers and the Braves, they would both be down in that series 3-1. And in baseball history, over 120 years, the amount of teams that have come back from a 3-1 deficit in a series, 14 of them. Like, you know, like literally, like we're talking like 2% of the time teams come back from 3-1. So, you know, don't go down 3-1. Like, you know, feels like a natural point to turn to the Blue Jays here and get into that. I know, Brennan, you were touching on it a little bit there. So let's get into it. You're a knowledgeable guy, and I'm really curious on your views on which directions this team needs to take. Let's start with John Schneider, and we'll go from there. If you, Brennan Delaney, were Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, and you're making the decision here, is he the guy you're bringing back?
I think just with how he has come up through the organization and has managed with Vlad and Bo and Biggio, I think you do have to bring him back, especially since what his record was 40 something in 28 or something like that. Like, he was a good manager and he did make sure that the Jays had home field advantage. I'd say you have to bring him back, maybe on a 1-year deal to see how he does next season. I don't actually think he did anything wrong in the wild card series either, other than maybe bringing in Meza to switch Santana around, but I don't think he mismanaged that in the slightest. I just think the guys didn't perform, at least in game 2 and game 1.
So Adam and I have talked about this, and I would love to hear your map out of what needs to go down. So in Adams and I, and we vary a little bit on certain things, but for the most part, they need to bring in probably 2 more starting pitchers, especially with Ross Stripling being a free agent. I'd love to see a little bit of depth at AAA with some starting pitching. I don't need basically what I want to see is another couple Mitch Whites, right? Some guys that, you know, have a lot of potential, might be stuffed in AAA for a while, just something other than Casey Lawrence. I'd love to see a big bullpen arm, you know. I don't think the bullpen needs all that much tweaking, but it sure would be nice to have an Edwin Diaz type back there, especially if you look. I know I'm picking the top guy out there, of course. But you know, if you just look at the payroll for the bullpen, they spent $15 million last year, and in comparison to some of these top playoff teams we're seeing right now, it is a drop in the bucket in comparison to some of them.
Isn't Chapman making like $16 million this season as well?
Yeah, Chapman's. Yeah, I mean, even Craig Kimbrell sitting in that Dodgers bullpen making a pile of money as their seventh inning guy type of thing, right? So, like, I'd also love to see Springer moved out of center field, and I'd love to see Bo moved to second base.
It's never going to happen. At least Bo moving to second. It should.
Very fair. So map out for us what you would like to see happen this offseason. And then we can just kind of get right into it.
I think they need a third starter. I think they would have to acquire that through trade. If I were Mark Shapiro or Ross Atkins, I would move Springer to right field. And then, and I say this because I love Teoscar Hernandez. He's a great player, but I would move on from him just with the 1 year remaining on his contract and making a lot more money than I'll ever make in my lifetime. I'd move on from him, trade him, see if I can get maybe a third in the rotation type of starter. You would probably have to add in some prospects in that trade, but try to maybe get that number three and then find someone as a number five in free agency. Mm-hmm. I would love to have Ross Stripling back, but I don't think he'll re-sign. Even if you give him a qualifying offer, this is his real only chance of making big money over term. So I think he would prefer 15 million over 3 years compared to 19.65 or whatever the qualifying.
Yeah. Let's talk Ross Stripling really quick here. I'm curious your thoughts on how much he gets, because he definitely put up some incredible numbers this year, career year. Do you think he's pitched himself into a 3 to 4 year deal?
Yeah. Well, honestly, even when he was with the Dodgers, like, I say it like this, like, out of his seven seasons, like, five and a half of his seasons have been phenomenal. Like, maybe not phenomenal is the right word, but he has been a sub-4 ERA pitcher for the majority of his career, except for the year that he was traded in. Very hard first full season with the Jays last season. But once he made those adjustments, I think he had 3 ERA or something like that for 67 pitches. And it's pitched like he's a good pitcher and has always been a good pitcher. He was just traded to the Jays when he had this really crack season. So I think giving him a qualifying offer, at the very least, you're getting a compensation pick. At the very worst, you're paying him $19.5 million, which I think he definitely would make. Has deserved this season.
I mean, I agree with you. I just looking at the free agent pitching market from last year and what happened, and watching Steven Matz get 4 years, watching Kikuchi's deal happen, you know, I think Stripling most likely, unless the Jays are the ones who are going to pay that $15 million a year, is probably on the way out the door.
I would only $12 million a year for 3 years. $36 million, but
yeah, the J-Hap deal, if you will.
Yeah.
Carry on. Sorry to interrupt you there. Just wanted to see your thoughts on Ross Stripling.
I think they can make internal changes. It's not internal changes. They could bring in guys from, you know, the minors. So like Addison Berger, he's been playing a little bit of second base in the Arizona Fall League. I think maybe a platoon between him and Whit Merrifield. They have some expendable players too, one at catcher, one at second base. And then fortunately, Teoscar Hernandez seems like he would be the one that you trade. Replacement center fielder, I think that Brandon Nimmo would be very nice to have. But I feel like if none of that happens, if they don't make any changes, I think they'd go for a guy like Tyler Nyquin or David Peralta. I think that is an upgrade over Tapia, but, you know, not kind of like, oh, yeah, we're making this huge change. because I could also see them keeping Teoscar Hernandez and just getting the compensation pick 2 years, two drafts from now as well. I think even the bullpen, yeah, it would be nice to get another big arm, like a Jimmy Garcia type deal where they bring in someone like that. But I also think they have Hagen Danner, who throws high 90s. You have Zulueta, who I personally think should be a starter.
Zulueta and Haggy D both had injuries this year, right? And kind of set them back.
Zulueta was a short injury. I think it was his shoulder, if I remember correctly. Right. But he did come back. Danner was an unfortunate. He didn't really pitch too much this season. But it's good to see that he's back at 90, 98. I think he was averaging in his last game. Hard slider. I think he threw like a 90 mile per hour slider as well that he lost the grip of and it just sailed over. But even you know, they really like their lefties with deception as well. And like Brandon Isner, even though he throws like 91 average, I think his deception makes it a lot better. And he is absolute hell on left-handed batters. Even a guy like Adrian Hernandez and blanking on the other one, I have in my notes somewhere, but you know, like they have a lot
And Adrian Hernandez, he pitches off his changeup, right?
It's low 90s as well.
Right.
He'll give up his fair share of home runs. That's my big concern.
Is that why he hasn't been brought up this season? Because he was doing very well with the Bisons.
Shoulder injury, and then when he returned from his shoulder injury, he did not pitch that great. So that makes
We're gonna put a pin in the prospect talk because we are going to dive right into that a little later on. So first, let's talk. Probably, in my opinion, anyways, one of the biggest problems with this Blue Jays lineup, and I'm no expert, I could be full of it, but I do want your opinion here. The DH spot is super clogged up right now, in my opinion. I think you look at George Springer and his health and the way things have going, and just even the center field position in general, once guys hit 30 and what happens, and normally they either get injured or they need to move to a corner outfield position. So it seems natural to want to move George Springer out of that center field position to preserve his body, get him into right field where he could play half the time there and maybe DH half the time and just get him into the lineup more often. Because when he's there and he's healthy, his production doesn't waver. It's when he's limping through games and missing time that you miss him.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, the other guy using a lot of time at DH is Alejandro Kirk. And this is where I can't wait to hear you talk, because we vary a little bit on our opinions on this, right? Because there's a lot of people out there who look at the catching position with the Blue Jays and see that it is obviously an area of strength. Danny Jansen with some big numbers this year, showing a little bit of power that we haven't seen from him. Gabriel Moreno, obviously a top five prospect in baseball currently. And then Alejandro Kirk, all-star catcher, big-time numbers. So my question for you is this, basically. If Alejandro Kirk is the guy you're keeping, because in my opinion, most likely to be moved out of that catching spot would be Alejandro Kirk for the DH reason. It's not that I want him traded. I would want big pieces coming back if he was even to be considered being moved. I truly love Alejandro Kirk and value him immensely. But it just seems to make sense if you're going to clear up that DH spot for George Springer that Kirk seems to be the odd man out. Now, I know on Twitter you've been very vocal about not moving Alejandro Kirk, and I would love your opinion on the best way to maybe clear up that DH spot, or even if that's being overblown a little bit in general.
I think it's being overblown, definitely. But
yeah?
I have a question for you. So how many plate appearances in his pro career do you think Danny Jansen has?
1,000?
I think it's a little bit over 1,000 now. How many do you think Alejandro Kirk has?
700? 800?
It's like almost bang on. So Danny Jansen has been in the league since 2018. and he only has 300 more plate appearances. And Kirk has been in basically since last season. I don't really count 2020. He only had what, like maybe 50 plate appearances. I think we tend to believe that, hey, Kirk is not your average catcher. He doesn't have the typical body. And we think that'll break down. And, you know, there may be some credence to that argument, but I think we're just looking at it the wrong way, because even though he may be bigger or whatnot, he has stayed relatively healthy. Like, he missed, yeah, a large portion of last season, but like this season he was completely healthy. He missed maybe like 4 games due to injury. But Danny Jansen gets injured every single season. And it sucks because he did make adjustments this season. He did pull the ball more. He did hit home runs. He did show his raw power that he's always had. But for me, when you trade Kirk, you're relying on Moreno and Danny Jansen, and you've seen how often Danny Jansen gets injured, and it sucks. It absolutely does. But when you move Danny Jansen, and if you move Kirk and then you rely on those two, if Jansen gets hurt, your main catcher is Moreno, and then you have a defensive replacement, basically. Like, let's say Vasquez of
Christian.
Yeah, formerly Christian Vasquez. Yeah, Christian Vasquez. Yeah.
You're not getting any, I mean, maybe a little bit for Moreno, but you're not getting the same production as you would if Kirk was there. And defensively,
so my question for you, Brennan, is do you envision Kirk being able to catch 3 to 4 times turn through the rotation? Can he take the bulk of the load? Because my only concern with Kirk is how many times he has to DH to get into the batting order.
I mean, I don't know the exact amount, but he did catch.
Because you want that bat in the lineup, right? Yeah. Like,
I feel like, yeah, even if you DH him and catcher both times, I think he provides a ton of value because defensively, he was one of the best catchers. His framing is just off the charts, his block, and same with Danny Jansen's block.
I will just jump in here with some clarification on Alejandro Kirk's stats. 78 games at catcher last year, 51 at DH.
So, like, that's nice. About half the season, is it? Yeah, half the season.
Yeah, about half the season. Good math there, Brennan.
George Springer, by the way, 40 games at DH.
I do like how they rotate the DH. I don't think guys like Lourdes Gurriel really needs it. Teoscar Hernandez probably doesn't need it. But like, if you just have Springer and Kirk as your DH, or Jansen and Springer, like I feel like that is still a recipe for success. Like, you don't really need to have a permanent DH. I feel like you can give half the time to one of the catchers and then half the time to Springer. I feel like you'd be successful that way.
So do you think they will move a catcher, or do you think they'll just roll with 3 catchers?
It's crazy, but I think that Gabriel Moreno could literally play all over the diamond, and I think that they should attempt that. Like, even people were talking about Dalton Basho of the Diamondbacks, who I literally had never heard of before, like, a week ago. Hey, we should trade Kirk for Dalton Basho plus, or the other way around, where Kirk, you'd be adding on with Kirk. But they can do that literally with Moreno. Like, he was a shortstop before they moved him to catcher, but he's just so athletic that he could pretty much play anywhere except for maybe first base, because he's a little bit short from position.
Yeah. I think the idea with Dalton Basho, I think it is, right? Because I was looking at his stats. I mean, he had a really good season. He had a 5 wins above replacement. I mean, he had a higher WAR this year than Kirk did. I know both catcher and center field are premium positions. Of course, everyone wants that lefty bat, right? And of course, Varsho's a lefty bat, and he hit 27 home runs. And he is under control until 2027. So you lose a year of control if you're moving Kirk for him. Do you think center field is something this team should be addressing? Or are you fine with Springer out there?
I think Springer moving to right field's not a bad idea, but I don't think you need to trade for a center fielder. I think that can be filled in free agency by signing Nemo. I feel like that is the ideal fit. But even then, like, I mean, Springer, like, he was unhealthy, but I don't know how much of that had to do with playing center field. I think he just got hit with pitches quite often, and just, it was unfortunate. And I think they need to look at how can we make sure that he stays healthy. But
yeah. All right, my dude, let's get into some of the things happening in the minor league system with the Blue Jays. I know that the prospects that have caught a lot of people's eyes this year and have moved up the rankings, you brought him up already, Addison Barger. So fill us in for those who don't know much about Addy Barger, because he kind of came out of nowhere. He was definitely not a top 10 prospect in this system until just this season. So please, wash your knowledge on us here, Brennan.
So off the top of my head, Barger had a 32.5 strikeout rate in low A last season. He had 18 homers. But as a 21-year-old in low A, I was like, well, I'm not going to include him in my top 20 preseason. And I'd even mention him in the honorable mentions. And then he started hitting really well in Vancouver. I think he was still at the top of the leaderboards by the end of the season, even though he moved on pretty quickly. And then he hit the ground running in New Hampshire, just absolutely insane for the first 100.
And his strikeout rate's lower too, right?
So that's another thing. His swing decisions are a lot better than last season. I mean, I didn't get to watch him last season because Lou A doesn't stream. They should, but different story. I'll go on a tangent about that for a while, but his swing decisions did get better. And I think what really sets him apart from a lot of prospects is his ability to adapt, because he adapted so well to Double A. Like, he was hitting like 400 or something like that in his first 100 plate appearances. And then he got injured, and then he came back and started hitting again. Then he was promoted to to Buffalo, and he just started hitting again. Like, it was just hit the ground running. He had like three home runs, and one of them was a time shot. So I don't know, man.
And where does he play, Brennan? Because he plays all over the diamond, right?
So far it's third base, shortstop, and then he hasn't played second base a lot, at least in the minors this season. But he has been playing it in Arizona Fall League. I think
interesting.
I think even maybe put him out in the corner or something. He could probably even play center field. He's a quick runner. He sometimes doesn't have the greatest ideas on the base paths. Okay. But he has a strong arm.
He's what, 21? He's 22, right? He's young.
22, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe even 23 now. But no, he's definitely...
He'll be 23 by December. November 12th, his birthday.
Also, with this swing, it's so short, so quick, no hitch in it, and just elite bat speed, and he just drives the ball, and it's a thing of beauty. He's just so good.
Is this a guy who could contribute to this Toronto Blue Jays team in 2023?
It's a hot take, and I've been roasted by this before, but I think that if he continues to hit the ball really hard, he has, like, I think he's hitting like 48% of the time he's hitting a hard hit ball in the Arizona Fall League. I think if he continues to do well there and then does well in spring training, I think he can make the team starting. Because again, another thing, Julio Rodriguez, who will probably win Rookie of the Year, Seattle's going to get a first rounder for that. So I think there's even more incentive to be like, hey, you know, we should maybe, if he's going to contribute, I think that he and like Whit Merrifield could platoon at second base, or we can move.
Yeah.
Barger around.
And I really like that. Now, I want your opinion on Spencer Horowitz, who is a lefty bat, who has produced offense every level that he's been at. Of course, the problem with Spencer is that he's a first baseman for the most part, and I know that they've been trying to get him some reps in the outfield and stuff. Is this a legitimate lefty bat that could contribute to the Blue Jays in 2023?
He has one of the best hit tools for Jay's prospect. I think the only other players that are in contention is Otto Lopez, Gabriel Moreno. He's just such a good hitter. Now, there's an argument, hey, you know, he's first base. He's supposed to be producing home runs. But I think that this team needs guys with different approaches than just, hey, let's hit homers. So I think even, like, in left field, he won't win any gold gloves, but he is competent. He doesn't look out of place. You know, he's maybe a below average defender out in left field, but I think that he could play it. And then you can kind of not necessarily platoon Lourdes Gurriel with him, because I do think Lourdes is maybe a better hitter. But you can find time for Horwitz's bat in both left field and first base. And then you can move on from like someone like Cavendishio and bring in Barger to replace him at second base. And then you would have Horwitz being able to back up first base.
So we've got some comments here in the chat. Aaron World Order says Otto Lopez with such a high batting average. What are your thoughts on Otto Lopez? Do you think he, I know he's been kind of this bench piece up until the playoffs here. Fast dude, plays around the diamond. Is he a little bit redundant when you start looking at this lineup with guys like Santiago and Merrifield and stuff? Is there a spot for a guy like Otto Lopez?
I think he should have got more plate appearances at the season. I don't think that calling him up and not playing him at all was ideal, because Otto Lopez is a crazy hitter. I think, again, like he and Moreno are probably the only two that can challenge Spencer Horwitz for being a good hitter, like a 65 hit tool. He just sprays the ball. He runs out ground balls. He's just such a good hitter. And with his versatility, you can find places for him. He doesn't have a necessarily strong arm, so he's kind of limited to second base, maybe left field. Right. He's a good center fielder too. He makes good routes. He has good range. Don't really know if I'd want him playing third base often, but I mean, I think they played him there at the end of the season. I think guys like that, I think they really like their versatility, and I think he could maybe sneak into a role that's owned by maybe like Santiago Espinal or Cavendishio. Maybe not Espinal, because Espinal does provide like well above average defense. But I think there's a place for Otto Lopez if they really truly wanted one for him.
Just touching on Espinal keeps coming across every time I try and write out my notes on where I think this team is going and off-season changes. Espinal feels like a movable piece. Am I crazy for saying that? Is there something I'm missing with Espinal? Like, I don't think he's a long-term Blue Jay. And Otto Lopez feels like that's just the next... Like, you need a guy like that, right? Who doesn't cost you anything, is going to hopefully overperform. But I feel like we've kind of gotten all we could possibly hope for out of Santiago. And I think he maybe has value to a smaller market team who needs a, like, serviceable shortstop piece, and could send a decent bullpen arm back in return.
I think with Espinal, I think they really liked his defense, and his defensive numbers at both second base and third base were really good the past two seasons. And even at shortstop, he is good. Like, not even looking at the defensive number, he's just a fluid defender, moves his feet, just good internal clock, which you don't see a lot with young players. I don't think he's a starting second baseman anymore. I know that he was in the All-Star game, but I think that he is a utility player and a good one.
Yes.
Like he absolutely mashes left-handed bat and left-handed pitching as well. Like he had a like 131 or WRC or something like that. Don't really want him in against righties, but I think that there is a place for Espinal. It just depends whether or not the Jays want to maybe bring in Barger instead, or bring in Otto Lopez, or even a guy named David Schneider, who I'm sure we'll probably get to at some point in this interview.
All right, let's talk David Schneider. Would love to hear your thoughts on him. Where does he play? I know he's currently in Buffalo, correct?
Yeah, so he's a second baseman and a left fielder. next to Barger, he's probably the biggest riser for position players. He's a good hitter, has some power, has some speed. Just solid over round. He's a ball player, as Pat Tabler would put it. He's a ball player. He knows how to play the game. And from everything that I've heard from different people, that he just has a work ethic that you don't often see. So for me, I say that it's not a matter of if he plays in the big leagues, it's when he plays in the big leagues.
Love that. Let's talk, before we get into pitching prospects, let's talk the prospect that most Blue Jays fans are aware of, Aroldis Martinez. Of course, his power continues to be jaw-dropping. He continues to hit the long ball. Where is Aroldis Martinez at in his development? And do you think he makes the move and the jump to AAA next year?
I think he will. If he has a good spring training, I think he will. So a lot of people tend to think because he has a low average, he's not a good player. It's just so unheard of for a 20-year-old to play double A. He doesn't have the experience that the pitchers have. And as he gains more experience, he's going to have a better approach at the plate. He's going to be able to actually hit for a better average, maybe 230, 240. But the fact he hit 30 homers, you can go on Fangraphs, go on the leaderboards, and you can list the most homers in all of double A, including other leagues in double A. I think he's like second or third. And everyone around him, everyone who's hit 20 homers is at least 23 or older, maybe 22. Aroldis Martinez hit 30 homers as a 20-year-old in double A. So you can say what you want about his hitting. He's an absolutely, he's a power machine. And I think that you can't discredit that, because I think when Vlad was in there, he didn't have the same power that Aroldis does. And obviously Vlad was a much better hitter. He was able to draw a lot more walks and he was able to hit for average, but he didn't have the same raw power as Aroldis did. And I think Aroldis will actually stick at third base compared to Vlad, who has now moved over to first. I don't think Aroldis will ever be as good as Vlad, but I think that there's a lot of similarities between the two players.
It's interesting when it comes to young players, everyone has a different developmental path. And I know that there's people who have cooled on Aroldis Martinez just because at 20, he's not banging on the doors to the big leagues. But that doesn't mean that he couldn't be a major contributor in 2024 or 2025. Do you think that he probably does need another year or two in the minors? Yeah, he does.
Right? I think definitely a year. I don't know if it'll be Buffalo. I was told, I thought he was going to repeat the level. I was told otherwise, but you know, like, hey, he probably, if he has good spring training, he will move to AAA. I think again, it'll come with experience. His approach will change as he gains more experience. And yes, he technically by WRC standards was a below average hitter, and he hit like 205 or something like that. But I think as he gains more experience, we'll see a jump in that as well as more power, because he's only going to get stronger. It's going to be insane when he hits like 50 bombs.
It should be interesting to see what this organization does. I know Aaron World Order in our chat here is mentioning it right now, but Chapman, he only has a year left, and there are some options there. I mean, you just mentioned Addy Barger. I should get the pronunciation right. I know you work with these guys. Is it Barger or Barger?
Barger.
Yeah. Thank you, Brennan. So for everyone in the chat,
Davis
Addison
Snyder,
Barger. There we go. The J. Yeah, so Barger could play. Martinez might be ready by then. You know, like, there are guys that could possibly take that third base and run with it, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they would provide the same defensive value as Matt Chapman, but I think that there's a lot more opportunity for more homers, or, you know, at least batting the same average at some point.
I did just want to hop in here on Aroldis Martinez. I did pull up the AA home run leaderboard on Fangraph. He is second in AA home runs this year with 30. Quincy Neoport of Detroit system has 31.
He's 27 years old. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Aurelvis Martinez is the only 20-year-old in the top 30 listed here. So
just a note on that as well. One, because I think it's pretty cool. But secondly, Francisco Alvarez, I think he had 17 before he was called up to AAA. He's arguably the best prospect in the system right now. But he was actually born on the exact same day that Aurelvis Martinez was. I think that was just cool to mention.
That is cool. Nice little tidbit. All right, Brendan, let's switch gears to pitching here before we let you go. We really appreciate your time, man, and your insight into this minor league system is truly eye-opening, so we appreciate you taking the time here. Pardon me. So there's three pitchers in the top 10 prospects within the Blue Jays rankings. Let's start with the guy that's on the tip of everyone's tongue, 20 years old. Risen up the rankings in 2022. It's funny because Baseball America, nowhere to be found was Ricky Tiedemann at the start of the season, and now he's, you know, a top 50 prospect in all of baseball. Ricky Tiedemann, what can Blue Jays fans expect out of him, and should we cool our jets a little bit on his development? And when I say that, by the way, I mean, is he going to be pitching on this team in 2023, or is it fine to let a 20-year-old because when it comes to Ricky, to me, I feel like it would be much better for him to dominate at AAA and force their hand than to maybe roll the dice like they did on Manoah, where they just needed a guy. Not that Manoah wasn't killing it at AAA when they brought him up, but I think that had the Blue Jays had a little bit better starting pitching, Manoah may have had to wait a little longer before he made his debut. Where are you at on Tiedemann?
With Manoah, like, I watched all 18 of those innings that he pitched in AA, and it was just like, he needs to be called up. He hit more batters. He had four batters in AAA, and he walked three batters.
He's still hitting batters.
Oh, yeah. No, I call him Manoah Sin. I call him Manoah Sin after Bob Gibson because he uses it as an intimidation tactic. At least that's what I think he does. I don't know if he actually does it, but he also has a two-seamer that just runs in. But, you can tell that Manoah had it, and Tiedemann has the exact same it. So Tiedemann, he sat about 95. He was hitting 98.2. Wow. Yeah.
Just turned 20.
He pitched as a 19-year-old in AA, and the only other pitcher that did that was Eury Pérez of the Marlins. I think we do see him in 2023 if he continues to dominate as he had throughout. Like, even put it like this, his worst performance at any level was in low A. So he came up in high A. His first five starts, he had like a sub-1 ERA. I think it was like 0.73 or something like that. Even his FIP was fantastic. By his last three starts, it did balloon because he was facing better teams. I think he faced the Seattle's team. I'm forgetting their name. But they had Kyle Lewis in the lineup as well. He struggled there, and I was like, okay, you know, like maybe just like cool him down, keep him there, let him dominate the rest of the season. Then they called him up to AA, and he had one bad start, and then he threw a no-hitter in three innings. He walked a guy and then threw the ball away, and then they got him out at third anyway. And it's like, okay, so this guy, he throws a bad inning where he pitches two innings, allows like three earned runs or something like that. He comes back the next game, way underage for the level, and he does this. He can't even drink, and he's doing this stuff in New Hampshire. Like, it's incredible. And I think he'll start in New Hampshire next season. If he dominates there, they move him up to AAA. If he starts to dominate there again, it's like, well, like, why keep him in AA when we could just move him up to the big leagues? Maybe as a bullpen piece at the start, but he's a left-hander that throws 98.2 miles per hour and sits 95. How many pitchers, even in the MLB, that are a left-hander that does that other than maybe like Yusei Kikuchi and Robbie Ray?
Yeah. No, he's an exciting prospect to say the least. And I know friend of the show, Semro Burse, is also a guy that has kind of, I wouldn't say he's blowing any doors down or shocking anybody or making huge waves, but he has consistently and progressively moved his way up this prospect rankings list in the Blue Jays. He's now sitting, I think, sixth or fifth or something like that. International free agent that they brought in from the Netherlands. Where are you at on Sam Robers? Also incredibly young, 20 years old, going on 21.
Nope, he just turned 20. No, he just turned 21. My bad, sorry. So Sam Robers a walk last season, so Ricky Tiemann could run this season. That's my best way of explaining it. So Sam Robers did the exact same thing as Ricky Tiemann did last season. Ricky Tiemann did this season. Sam Robers did last season to a lesser extent, but he was a 19-year-old. He absolutely dominated in low A. Then they moved him up to high A. He hit kind of a wall there. He struggled a little bit. Then when he returned this season, he started to do really well again. Then they moved him to double A, where he did all right. In his last game, I think he had like 10 strikeouts or something like that, or that may be Jimmy Robbins. All kind of meshes together at this point. But he's just such a fluid pitcher that I think he could be, like, his ceiling to me is he could be number three in the rotation, and his floor, that's what's important to me. He is someone who will pitch in the MLB.
That, I love hearing that, Brandon, and that is one thing about Sam Robers that I've always thought too, is like, when it comes to his delivery, it's so smooth. It's not like he's blowing down doors with his velo. He doesn't have one pitch that you're just like, this is a top 10 pitch in the league he's pitching in. But
he's a pitcher.
He does the little things right. I love you hearing you say that. When you look at Robers, is he a guy that we could possibly see in 2023 in the Jays as
no,
well?
No, I don't think so. I think he's a 2024 guy. Yeah. I think he'll start in low A and then maybe move up to triple A midway through the season. But I think 2024 is when we'll see him.
All right, my dude. I appreciate your time so much, Brennan, and just coming in here and filling us in on this minor league system and giving us your thoughts on the Jays. Truly appreciate it. All the best, my man. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Before we let you go, did you have anyone in the minor league system that we should hear or know about?
I got my notes for that.
That maybe some Jays fans haven't?
I mentioned David Schneider earlier.
Yeah,
Dexter Berger had the biggest jump. Damiano Parmigiani, a lot of hard hit balls, 14th rounder last season, can draw a walk. Very fun, nice hard swing too. Deson Brown built his stock back up. He has 80 grade speed, good range, but he added his power and was able to hit. So all those tools are kind of coming together.
And he's young too, right? How old is Deson? I know he's a Canadian boy.
21, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
Dejan Santos, just crazy spin rates on his slider.
Reliever, right? Santos?
No, he's a starter. Nope.
Oh, is he? Okay. Yeah, and he's in double A?
He moved to high A at the end of the season. He was 19. Okay. 19, I believe.
Awesome. Amazing.
Jimmy Robbins, I mentioned him a little bit. They love their relievers. They love their lefties with deception, but not high velo. And he's 91 to 93 miles per hour, but he does hit 95. Cutter, changeup, slider, and the four seamer. Lazaro Estrada, this will blow your socks off. His spin rate on his curveball sits 3,263 RPMs. I did something. I looked at all the big leaguers since 2016, and there was only 8 pitchers that had a higher average in a season. Garrett Richards, Sims, Lugo, Presley twice, and then Dustin May this season.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Pretty elite RPM group there, yeah.
Yeah. And then he also sits 92, but he was hitting 95.8 or something like that. And then I mentioned Burnett, who is a hard-throwing lefty reliever. Devontae Brown had one of the highest exit velocities, average of hard-hit balls. He was an undrafted free agent. Rainier Nunez was the only Dunedin Blue Jay to hit over 110 miles per hour exit velocity. Did that like five times. Gabriel Martinez, Trenton Wallace had an 11 pitch strikeout game. And then I like to include Peyton Williams because he's a 6'5", 265 pounded first baseman, left-handed hitter. Surprisingly, has the power, but he also hits for an average, and it's just bonkers. He hits the ball hard as well. So those are some guys that you may not know. A lot of them are first baseman for some reason, but
right on. Hey, again, Brennan, thank you so much for joining us. I hope we can have you back sometime.
Of course, anytime.
Right on, dude. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh. With a drive. Season cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.